Please be seated. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, most of us like dogs, right? Before the 8 o'clock service, we have a neighbor that drives by with an SUV full of golden retrievers. At least three of them, I believe, climber over each other to stick their head out the window and get that, and it's really great. So, years ago, right after my ex-husband and I got married and got our first apartment, our first addition to our family was an adorable little puppy. We picked her up at a flea market with very little knowledge about dogs. We saw how adorable she was and fell in love with the idea of a cute little housemate. We got her home, set up her new bed and toys, expecting this cute little ball of fluff. And she began to bark, not delicate little yips, but blood-chilling snarls. We looked at each other in terror, just what was this creature we'd bought? We had something very different than we thought we had. We were really in new territory here, and this was a very new situation. And it was scary and uncertain and a bit exciting. We did some research and found out that she was a chow. That was research we should have done first. I took her to obedience training and was warned that she would be a challenge and to be careful. We were told not to keep her if we planned on having children, and this was really not what we were expecting. However, as she grew, not only was she beautiful and patient and loyal, but she was an inborn guard dog. She was a one-person dog and decided that I was her person, despite my ex-husband demanding that he be her person. Instead, she frequently chewed up his shoes with his feet still in them. So she was clearly intelligent as well. She learned every trick I taught her, and she did refuse to fetch, however. She would kind of roll her eyes at me and say, "What type of a dog do you think I am?" And when my children were born, she sat by their beds and guarded them all night, every night. When they were in a room, she would lay across the threshold and allow no one but me to cross. Once, when my daughter was a toddler and another child took a toy away from her, the dog approached the other child, pulled a toy out of his hands, and dropped it at my daughter's feet. I thought I was getting a cute bit of fluff, but I ended up with a friend, a bodyguard, and a babysitter of sorts. I had her, or I should say she had me, for 14 years, and no dog I've had since has measured up to her. She wasn't what I expected, but she was so much more. For the past several weeks, we've learned about Jesus' travels toward the cross and the theme of his doing something new. One week, we learned about Jesus casting out a demon and bringing a new teaching. People were asking, "What is this?" The next week, we learned about Jesus raising Peter's mother-in-law from a sickbed, his reaching down and raising her up, or resurrecting her health and spirit. Next, he brings the disciples to a mountaintop where they hear the voice of God, and he tells them that he will rise from the dead. Last week, Abraham and Sarah were the recipients of a new promise. Each week is becoming more dramatic, building momentum, rising to a crescendo. This week continues this progression. The gospel writers have shown us through Christ's actions and through literary examples an increasingly clear picture of a world that will be turned upside down and thus set to rights. It was not what anyone at the time expected. We see Jesus and the disciples arriving in Jerusalem at Passover time. The Passover celebrates the exodus of the children of Israel from their bondage to Pharaoh in Egypt. It was the biggest holiday of each year, with all the Jews headed back to Jerusalem to worship at the temple. In our time, we head home for Christmas, if only in our dreams. In Asian countries that celebrate Lunar New Year, everyone goes home. China annually has the largest migration of people in the world for this holiday. Holidays home bring us back to our identity, either to bask in our roots for a few days or to be thankful that we've moved on. The Passover was this for the Jews of the time. They came back home to the temple, which was the center of life for them and central to their identity as a people. But even more than that, it was a place where the human and the divine met, where God was present with them and available to them. Many historians claim that it was compulsory for all Jewish men over age 30 to visit the temple at Passover and to offer sacrifices. Many Old Testament passages go into minute detail about these requirements. At the time of our story, the religious leaders had begun to verify that the sacrifices were perfect, and usually only those purchased on the premises passed inspection. The perfect sacrifices were unblemished animals, usually lambs or doves, and access to the divine had become dependent upon bringing a perfect sacrifice to God, and was allowed only for men and those rich enough to afford such an animal. Thus, exclusion had entered the temple. Most people bought acceptable animals from the dealers on the temple premises for an inflated price, and the currency of the Roman Empire had to be exchanged into other acceptable currency, so money changers abounded, often taking a cut of the rates. Corruption had entered the temple as well. Instead of a place to meet God, the temple had become very far from that. It had become a system based in fear and exclusion for many, in a place where some of the religious leaders took advantage of others, financially and otherwise, benefiting themselves upon the backs of the working people. The historian Josephus tells us that Jewish nationalism was at an all-time high at this time, with warring factions among the Jews. Many Jewish religious leaders had turned the faith of the people towards a nationalism and pride. The Pharisees and Sadducees were leaders of two different schools of thought regarding the faith. Their interpretations of who God was, how he should be worshiped, and his intentions toward his people had polarized the Jewish faith. Today, we well know what this polarization in our own faith looks like. As is the case today, the casualties of this polarization and nationalism were the poor and the marginalized. Their access to God had been hindered. The temple had become a place of division run by those who considered themselves to be in God's inner circle, and God's compassion, welcome, and love was no longer to be found there. Into this divided, polarized environment, Christ arrives, the beloved Son of the Father whose name was being misused or taken in vain. To take God's name in vain is not swearing, as so many of us have been taught, but happens when we do things that are against God's principles and hurt or exclude others and say we are doing God's work. We see in our Old Testament reading this morning that this is one of the Ten Commandments. We probably recognize it most easily in the King James Version. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. We see it here in our Old Testament reading in a more modern version. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. I know in my own life there are those whom I love who delight in excluding others for their race, gender, or beliefs. It tears at my heart that they could act this way and honestly believe that they are doing God's will by using his name to condemn and shame others. For those on the receiving end of this, there is no more painful of a rejection than to believe that you're rejected by God simply for the color or race you are born, or your family's economic status, or who you love. So we see this scene in the Gospels where Jesus cannot abide by what has happened in his Father's name. He overturns the tables in anger about this, but also to demonstrate a point that the old system will be overturned. He himself will become the new system. John states that unequivocally to the reader when he says, but he was speaking of the temple of his body. He wants to make sure that the reader doesn't miss this, that we understand clearly. Many times we don't understand clearly. Too often this passage is used as an excuse to be angry, to say, Jesus was angry, so I can be angry, or righteous anger is allowed. Anger isn't the point of this passage, although it does show Jesus' human side. Jesus speaks of his divine side, where the human and divine meet, where where he is the new temple and the new sacrifice, where he is telling his disciples that a new system is about to take place, a new understanding of what they thought would happen and a shattering of the old systems. A new system is being brought into being, one of love, inclusion, freedom, and healing, where all have access to God. What would this have looked like to a person in the temple at the time, however? This sacrificial system and all that went along with it was what they knew. The ways we know are how we make meaning in our world. And here comes Jesus threatening to turn the world as they knew it upside down. It was God doing a new thing. And new things are scary. It is scary when the way we make meaning is challenged and we don't like it. But it's a little bit exciting too. The prophets often use smaller local examples to prove a larger point. God would tell them to perform an act that represented something to the people. The prophet Jeremiah was told to lay on his side for hundreds of days to represent coming destruction. The prophet Hosea was told to marry a prostitute and take her back repeatedly after she cheated on him to represent how God would take Israel back. Jesus was making such a point here. By overturning a few wooden tables, he was showing the people that he was going to overturn everything they knew about God in the systems that govern one's approach to God. He foretold of a time in which their building and sacrificial altars would be torn down, and this happened 40 years later in 70 AD. The Greek for destroy has two meanings. One, the word catastrophe, as we know it as catastrophe, means to tear down. And the second meaning, the word lusate, to release. In this passage, the word lusate is used. So in a way, he is saying, release this temple from the demons of what has gone wrong, the exclusion, the abuse, the cheating, the oppression, and I will rebuild it again in a new system of love, compassion, and self-sacrifice. He does just that and rebuilds the temple, his body, on Easter morning. He has made us a church that has been released from the laws that have fostered oppression and made us a church of love. He has overturned the old tables and giving us a new one, and it doesn't matter which side of it Dante stands on, one in which we gather around and through the Eucharist remember the sacrifice and around which all are welcome. So the people in Christ's time were seeing a new thing. Something unexpected, something different and scary and exciting. And it was hard, as new things are. The disciples would have to come to a deeper realization of what it means to believe in Jesus. They would have seen that following Jesus meant more than watching miracles and healings, listening to teaching, and lots of good wine. They realized that maybe this wasn't quite what they expected, but it was so much more. John reminds us, the reader, that after Christ was raised from the dead, the disciples remembered what he said about his body becoming the temple and believed. They remembered what he said and did. John is in effect reminding us to remember. Remember always, but especially in this Lenten season, in the breaking of the bread and the prayers, of the sacrifice Christ became, to become the place where the human and the divine meet, and that we can meet the divine here at his table in our humanness. So today we also see God doing the unexpected, and we can be especially aware of it during this season of Lent. We may feel that our lives are being turned upside down. Like the people watching Jesus turn over the tables, we are watching our world change. And it's scary. And we often don't like it, because new things are hard. But they're a little exciting too. May we remain open and receptive to the new things that God is doing, and we might just find that even though it is not what we expected, it is so much more. God bless you all. Amen.